gods. They're just like us. Neurotic, depressed, anxious, gossipy, and bitter, and nasty and petty sometimes. Probably some legit mental disorders banging around in there. So in a sense, we're all godlike. That's cool. It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. Understand, I'm not talking about, like, the Christian God right now. I mean the Greek ones. And they're the stars of Rachel Smythe's incredibly popular comic series, Lore Olympus. All the big ones make appearances in it, Zeus, Hera, all them. But the series is focused especially on Persephone, goddess of spring, and her relationship with Hades, god of the dead and king of the underworld. In Lore Olympus, the world inhabited by the gods sometimes involves sports cars, tabloid newspapers, and cell phones. It brings the comics up to date. And comic here, as a term, doesn't necessarily mean funny. Lore Olympus takes on themes of rape, harassment, abuse, and trauma, much like the original myths do if you read them closely enough. Lore Olympus is a number one New York Times bestseller now, and there are multiple published volumes, but it started as Smythe's creation at an online comics platform called Webtoon. Webtoon is kind of like the YouTube of comics, really. Users all over the world submitting work they made themselves. The really successful and popular ones can make money. The panels aren't displayed like regular comic books. Instead, they're all vertical. You read them by scrolling. I spoke with Rachel Smythe about a lot of things, and this conversation goes to some pretty deep and surprising places. We talked about making art, we talked about mythology, of course, and school and social isolation, and depression and ADHD and night terrors. We talked about trauma, and we talked about being a workaholic. You'll find it interesting if you're a comics fan, and you'll find it interesting if you never read comics. Also, you'll notice that Rachel laughs a lot at things that aren't really jokes. We talk about that too. Oh, and she joined us from New Zealand, where she lives. Rachel Smythe, welcome to Depression Mode.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
How did Lore Olympus come about?
So, this is my origin story.
Yes.
In 2017, I think I had seen Webtoon as a platform, and I was like, well, there's lots of big giant comics here. Fantastic. And I had always kind of wanted to make comics, but, you know, nothing to this scale, obviously. Like, I, you know, right. Just dabbled, you know, like, you know, just for fun, just for myself.
Yeah, it didn't end up being a dabbling, but yes, I understand. Yes.
And, you know, I turned 30 in 2016, and I sort of got to 2017, and I was like, well, what now? Like, I thought we were going to be an artist, but we're not. Like, what's up with that? And I just kind of challenged myself to just start doing a drawing every day, because I think this is a story which is so familiar to people, in the sense that, like, I think, you know, when we're young, we really want to be creative and do all this creative work. But obviously, getting paid for creative work is quite difficult, right? Like, it's not an easy thing to do. The entry to it is a challenge. And, you know, I, you know, got on with life and, like, having my various day jobs and things. And I think, you know, tale as old as time is, like, I'm tired. And the idea of, like, jumping on a computer after your whole work day or work week to make something else is, like, quite difficult. And you have to be, like, you know, a little bit of a hard ass, really, and be like, well, I mean, you're always going to be tired, right? Like, that's adulthood, so you better get cracking. So I essentially was like, oh, I'm just going to do a drawing every day. And then I was like, well, I'm going to have a go at this Webtoon thing. Like, obviously, I'm not going to be making these huge chapters every week, but I'm like, if I could just do, like, a couple of panels, you know, a day, I mean, not a day, like a week, and release them, you know, that's a thing. And I sort of treated it a lot like how, you know, when you, like, train at the gym or something, you're like, I have goals and I'm going to work out at the gym and become a fantastic bodybuilder or something like that. I don't know. But that was what I was going for. I did like a really rough plan. I'm very much just, I'm incredibly impatient. So I think this is how the internet kind of benefits me is, you know, the barrier to entry is very low. Like you can make something tomorrow and put it up the next day and you're like, it's out in the world. You don't have to wait for approval from anybody and you just do it. So I think I put up the first episode, I believe, was about 4 to 6 panels and I put it up. And I went out and I came back and I had 6 comments and I was like, woo, I won't let this fame change me. And it escalated. That's the best way to describe it. And I just kept, you know, trying new things and updating it, you know, every week or every 2 weeks obsessively for a year or so. I think like I started it in May of 2017. And I think in November, Webtoon reached out and they were like, would you like to make an original? And I was like, yeah, I would. And, you know, the rest is history.
How far back does your interest in mythology and the myths of Hades and Persephone go back? How far have you been interested in that?
Say like from about 11 to it was like when I first had my major memory of it. I think I was really I reached middle school and I was like, wow, I am truly an outsider. Like, you know, when you are just aware as a kid, you know, I knew I was weird. And then I started high school, which is like around like, you know, your 12 age bracket in New Zealand. And I was like, yay, thank goodness. I will find my people at high school. I will find them. I'm like, I've done a lot of research into Victor Hugo's Hunchback of Notre Dame, and I cannot wait to talk with my peers about it. And I have to tell you that did not happen. And I was very lonely and very isolated. And I think I got very hyper-fixated on these myths at the time because, I don't know, you know, when you just go through dark periods and you're like, this is just what I need right now to get through.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's really, those two things are very much linked for me now. I can't unlink them, yeah.
Well, a couple questions. What do you mean you were weird? In what ways were you weird?
I was, you know, when there's that kid at school, like especially at primary school, that nobody likes, like they are just the zero of everybody. That was me for like a very long time, very, very long time. And I think probably after even when I was 6, I was like, oh no, I'm like, people do not like me kind of thing. And I was well aware of that. And I think I have ADHD, so that probably has something to do with it. And, you know, I think on a certain level, I'm like on the spectrum. So you just kind of see the world in a different way. I think a lot of people will understand, like if you have any sort of like disability, you'll be like, oh, this is like the world is not going to shape around me.
Right, right. People aren't going to be the ideally as understanding as you would,
no.
You would like them to be. Or as they should be. What was it about mythology in general and Hades and Persephone in particular that gave you comfort? Like, why was that the thing you were leaning on?
I think the thing that is enjoyable about Greek mythology in particular is the ambiguity of it. Because it's very, I don't know if matter of fact is the way to put it, but like, when you're reading like these very, very old poems and like little bits of poems, or what have you, there's not a lot of detail in terms of like if you read like the Homeric hymn to Demeter, which is where these characters are most, you see them most in, like you're never going to see a bit about like this is what Persephone's day was like. She went to this area and made breakfast and this is how she felt about it. Like they're very etiological in the sense that like they're more there to describe the reason why there is spring and winter, etc. They're less to do with the feelings, if you will. So I think it's fun to get caught up and swept up and filling in those blanks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it seems like it's sort of the same idea that people have with superheroes or with pop stars or something, like this kind of imagining the inner life of these larger-than-life figures.
I think that's very true. Because, like, you know, if you think about, like, really early Batman, there's, like, not much to him. But, like, you can... No shade, sorry, of Batman. But I think people are just obsessed with, like, the mythology of Batman now. And they're like, why can't I, you know, what's his backstory? What were his parents doing kind of thing? Why did they get shot? Now they own an orphanage. Now Bruce Wayne's mother is nuts kind of thing. You know what I mean? Sorry, that's probably not a good way to describe it, I think.
Well, yeah, like the Adam West Batman from the old TV show didn't really have that layer so much, I suppose.
No, just the spandex.
Drawn-on eyebrows, which I thought were fantastic.
And the dancing. He dances, right? I didn't make that up.
No, he does.
He does dance.
He does.
Thank God.
Yeah, Adam West actually went to the same college that I did many years before.
Really?
Yeah, a tiny college in Walla Walla, Washington in the United States. So I've always been aware of the career arc of and the eyebrow arc of Adam West. I kept that in mind.
That's incredible.
So you're making comics on Webtoon. They call up and say, hey, why don't you make an original? Mm-hmm. And you were steeped in mythology. There's a lot of different characters in mythology in a lot of different situations. What was so strong about Hades and Persephone that you wanted to put in all the work that was going to be involved, like to write a book or to make anything on this scale, you've got to have a lot of attachment, a lot of love for these characters. What was it about them?
Oh goodness. Again, I think it's like that childhood obsession that just would not leave. And at this stage, it's like, it's really hard to, you know, give a distinct reason why I am so drawn to these characters. But it's just one of those things where it just came to me very easily and is a fun and enjoyable thing to do that feels very natural. You know, when you just get an idea and it just flows. You know, having like that very early childhood meshing up of those two things, I'm like, I don't think this can be like undone, if you know what I mean.
Right.
I'm like, it's just, I don't want to say it was what I was born to do because it sounds very overdramatic and silly, but I think just, you know, when you've adored something for such a long time, it just becomes a very easy thing to do.
And it's what you've made is obviously very well received and winning awards. And I can tell from reading what fans and readers have written about this, that it goes very, very deep for a lot of people, what you've created. It's become very important. You mentioned having ADHD, and I know that I read on your Twitter that you've dealt with anxiety issues as well. Mm-hmm. How do you complete this huge concentrated task like the Lore Olympus series, if it is even complete? Like, it's voluminous at least. And you would think that somebody dealing with ADHD would be unable to keep that sustained thought for that long.
It is hard. It's very hard.
Yeah.
I don't want to say I'm lucky, but I do think that it really helps that I was diagnosed as a child, because I feel like there is many adults at the moment who, you know, are only just getting like diagnosed. But, you know, I had a bit of a leg up in the sense that in the 90s, I don't think there was that much information on ADHD. I don't even think I got a solid explanation at the time, but I knew that was a thing that I was dealing with that I had to manage. Again, it's like that, going back to that concept of the world when you have like any type of disability is probably, though they should help you out, will not help you. out.
Right.
Like, even earlier on, I think it's like less of a stigma now, but I do remember like at my earlier jobs not telling anybody because there's such a stigma. And I think even when I did tell people, I do remember having a boss who wrinkled up their nose when I told them.
When you said ADHD?
I was like, yeah, I have ADHD, and they wrinkled up their nose, and I was like, oh cool, thanks. I know this is great. I won't lie, I think everything takes me much longer than a regular person would take to do. So I had many secret late nights at work, if you will, just like working to produce the same amount of work that, you know, a regular person could. And it, you know, it kind of sucks, but that's just where I'm at. I think now, obviously, I'm like really interested in what I'm doing, so that helps. I also have people to help me now, like, you know, this is, I can contract out to have people help me with lines and flats and all that line work and things like that. Like, I don't have to do it all on my own now, which is super helpful. But yeah, there are times when it's really hard and you just have to work on, I mean, I'm medicated. I know that doesn't work for everyone, but I'm medicated and I also have to work with a system of just being really mindful, because the internet is very seductive now in terms of all the things. Like, I have a TikTok, but I will not dare touch TikTok because I feel like there's a hole that I will just vanish down into and never return.
There go all your other hours just sucked in.
Woo! Because you can just click on a thing and read it, and then you're reading, especially Twitter, like you just go on there and you start reading an argument between two strangers for like 30 minutes and that's gone and there's no benefit.
Well, I know from talking to a lot of people with ADHD, and this is something that I didn't know about it until relatively recently, because I would meet people who had ADHD, but yet had like expert world-class level times of solving a Rubik's Cube or could type faster than everybody on this one special alternative keyboard. And I would say, well, how do you, this was the same guy who could do both these things. And I said, how could you do that if you have ADHD? And he says, no, you don't understand. I can concentrate on those things, but everything else in my life kind of falls apart. Like I can choose what I'm really intent on. It's just sort of an unbalanced life. Has that been your experience? Like other things have suffered or fallen away?
Yes. I wouldn't describe myself as an extreme case. I think finding help and guidance for ADHD can be very difficult in the sense that like you have to be in a dire situation for people to recognize that you need help, which I actually think is not that great. I'm like, you literally have to be like losing jobs and getting kicked out of your house and being addicted to drugs kind of thing. That's kind of the things that I've discovered on my search throughout my lifetime. And I'm like, I've never been fired or evicted or anything. And I think, you know, I have like a deep need to, you know, people please and do all these things. So I think I'm fine. Like, you know, I'm a goody two shoes too. Like, there's things that I definitely crumble apart. I think I'm bad at managing my relationships with people because in my head I'm like, yeah, this relationship is going great even though we haven't talked in like 6 months. And like that person will be like, no, you hurt my feelings kind of thing. And I'm like, oh no. I'm bad at taking care of myself. I think things that affect other people, I know enough to get those things done because I'm like, no, because I will be held accountable for that. But literally there's things like, I won't get into gruesome details, but last year
it's okay if you get into gruesome details.
This is like medical, so I won't deep dive.
Okay, all right.
I got on like a hiatus, which is, you know, like a production break, which, you know, I have like once a year kind of thing, like a long format one. Because normally I publish like every week, but I was like, yeah, my season has ended and I'm having a break. And I basically was like, I have all this medical stuff that I need to catch up on. So I basically had like a medical checkup festival where I got my calendar and booked in all these different doctors to go to because I was like, this shit ain't right. Oh no. And I went to one specialist and I had an infection that I had ignored for a long time. And the specialist was like, you're like a week away from going to the emergency room. Like, this is bad.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she was like, girl, like, that's not good. And I shouldn't laugh, but, you know, it's that kind of stuff where I really have to make an effort to take care of myself because I'm like, you can't physically recover from things like you could in your 20s. It's not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was that just from being so dedicated to your work, to the comics that you make, that everything else just fell away?
Yeah. Yeah, it's my ability to prioritize is a bit shit. I'm very lucky. I have a very well-organized partner.
Okay.
He is extremely well-organized. He knows how to manage and sort things. You know how some people just know how to clean and they know, like, if you gave them, like, a kitchen pantry and you were like, sort this out, they'd be like, yes, and then it's immaculate. He is one of those people, and I am very lucky to have him to kind of be there to be like, this is how you do things, because I'm like, I don't even know.
Yeah. And how have things like your ADHD and anxiety issues, how have those found their way into what you make?
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of sincerity there, which I think is why the work is so successful, because when I write, I'm like, literally, this is like how I feel and how I have felt. And I have a lot of issues with like depression and stuff. Like, I don't know what it's called now. I think like they update the names for things all the time, but I've always had high functioning depression. And so, you know, I just kind of, I don't know if this sounds bad, but I'll reach into like that barrel of experiences which were not so good and be like, how did you feel in those moments? And how can I translate this into dialogue that feels realistic and relatable for people? That's how I go about it, which I'm still reconciling with this, because I hate the idea of like, oh, artists need to feel pain, because I'm like, I think that they don't though. Like, I think maybe.
It'd be nice if they didn't have to, but.
Yeah.
And they don't. Like, they would make more and better art if they weren't dealing with all that pain.
I'm like, if I didn't have trauma, wouldn't I be like so much better? Because I wouldn't be like having my lunchtime cry kind of thing.
Right. I gotta say, you know, we're talking about trauma and ADHD and depression, and you're laughing a lot. Is that, why is that?
I don't know. If you can't laugh at yourself, what are you gonna do?
All right.
Like, if you can't laugh in the face of evil, like,
yeah,
how do we go on?
Right. Then the evil gods will win. Then it sounds like a lot of what the characters are saying and are going through, it's coming from your experiences, as I suppose is common with most artists in a way. But yet these are, you know, this is the goddess of springtime, and this is the god of the underworld, and like these are Greek gods, these are literally gods. So how do you make them relatable and still keep them as gods? And is that a balance that you have to consciously struggle with?
I actually don't think that it's difficult at all, because really? I think that's the appeal of Greek gods. They're not like, you know, a Christian god who I believe is meant to be super good. Yes, I think.
Yes, like, I think so.
He's out there doing good stuff. And Greek gods, that's why people are so into them, because they are jealous and they get mad and they have all the same qualities that we do, or not qualities, but you know, they're very human, which is great, is what makes them fun to read about and compelling. They're almost to be avoided. Like, you don't want to meet up with Hera. You don't want to do like the wrong thing. That's what makes them so compelling. Like, Zeus is always having affairs. Like, he's not a good Christian god. He's like out there making demigods and things.
Yeah. So how far back does the depression go for you?
Oh, I feel like...
We'll get an answer to that right after the break. You know what I like? I like when things are easy. Man, easy things are just the best, because obviously there are plenty of parts of life already that can be very, very difficult. So bring on the easy. My favorite easy things, I have to admit, are when something seems like it would be difficult, but turns out to be easy. Oh, I love that. Case in point, building your own website and web presence with Squarespace. I did this years ago and found it to be delightfully simple. I can build a site, make changes, redesign everything if I want, all very simple. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. You don't need to be a web guru. You become the guru. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. They accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Upload video content, organize your video library, and showcase your content on beautiful video pages. You can even sell access to your video library by adding a paywall to your content. So why not get started now? Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/depresh to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. squarespace.com/depresh.
Hey friends, Jesse here, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have some really great news to share with you. This year has brought a lot of changes for all of us. And one tradition that we were grateful to be able to hold on to is our annual pin sale to benefit charity. This year, through your generosity and love of pins, you helped raise $95,400 for Give Directly. If you're a member and you bought pins, they'll ship in January. In the meantime, your support will provide direct cash relief to families impacted by COVID-19 across the United States. Even in this incredibly tough year, the MaxFun community remains extraordinarily kind. And whether or not you bought pins, you can continue to help by heading to givedirectly.org. And as always, thank you.
Talking with Rachel Smythe, creator of the Lore Olympus series of comics, before the break, I asked how far back her depression goes. And then she made this sound.
I feel like it's a lifetime thing. It probably really hit me in the, I would say, probably as far back as 10. Yeah, like really early on, like really long life thing, yeah.
How did it come about? Like, how did you first notice it?
It was definitely a culmination of being a very strange child, like I said, and not really fitting in anywhere, but also having quite a few learning disabilities. So when you are a child and you have various learning disabilities, you can feel yourself being a burden. Like, I know that's not the case, but I think that's how it feels at the time. Like, you feel like the pressure of like other children being aware that you are not smart, and you feel the using up of resources, and you feel like the extra money that your parents have to pay in order for you to like kind of get there, kind of thing, like cross the bar. Because I think when you're a really little kid, you're just not aware. You're just out there doing coloring in, and you, as time goes on, you're like, oh, I'm actually not good at anything and nobody likes me. So I think that's quite a hard thing to deal with.
Well, what is it like now then when you have fans all over the world and so many people don't just like you but love you? Like, how are you able to receive that? How are you able to accept that?
I think it's amazing and it's dangerous. Like, it's really cool, and I absolutely adore the people that, you know, love and support my story. But I think it's really important to keep in the back of my head that, like, people do not love me as a human being, because they do not, like, we've never met. And I think that's how that sort of thing can be quite dangerous, because, you know, I'm very grateful that they love the story I've made. That's, you know, makes them happy or makes them feel a sort of way. I think that's really cool and I really appreciate that. But I think if you sit there and you're like, billions of people love me, I'm like, no, they don't. They've never met me. We've never sat in the same room. So I think it's good to have that perspective because I'm like, well, what happens when, you know, the story ends and people are less interested, you know? I'd like to manage it like that because I feel like if you think that lots of people love you as a human and then your project ends and then those people, you know, are gone and it's very conditional, how will you feel?
Well, is that a defense mechanism? Because it seems like, you know, you've talked about how the work that you do is an extension of yourself and these things that these characters say and do is coming from you. And clearly people have found that in the work. And, you know, I just don't want you missing out on love.
That's really nice. It probably is a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with that.
Okay. because then if you don't make anything for a while and then they disappear, then you won't get as hurt?
Yeah.
Okay.
So right. I suppose that is a defense mechanism.
I think we've had a breakthrough today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Dr. John. Please cancel the rest of your appointments. Yeah, like I don't want to sound ungrateful because I definitely, you know, it's an amazing and special thing to have so many people support you. I will say that, like, it does choke me up on a regular basis having the support of so many people. What I will say about it that I do, I guess, luxuriate in is I, as a person, have a problem with, like, communicating with people and expressing myself in a very authentic way. But I feel like with my art, I can do that. So when people understand the art and connect with it, that makes me feel very good.
You mentioned on Twitter that you deal with night terrors sometimes.
Oh, yes.
Are those work related? Are those art production related?
Do you mean in terms of like I'm stressed out and well, I start screaming?
In terms of the content of those night terrors, like is it, you know, what's in them? What happens? You don't have to explain them if you don't want to.
I think my night terrors are very much like a symptom of I once had a stalker that lived, like I lived in one of those houses that's like divided up into four, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
So I had a stalker who lived under our little house flat thing. And unfortunately, like when I say this, I don't want to like create more stigma around this mental illness. But I think so that this particular man had a schizophrenia, but he had no one to look out for him or care for him. And he was definitely a product of a system that's like not working. So let me just preface this by saying that I don't think that everyone with schizophrenia is out of control like this.
Right. But he was untreated and he was...
He is untreated and he was very delusional and he basically... Oh God, I think I was like 21 at the time. And I had just moved to a new city and he was very, very, very religious. I think at times he believed he had a special connection with Jesus or that he was Jesus. But he would, I didn't have a job when I first moved and my partner would go out to work all day and I'd just sit there. And like, he would come over and he'd knock on the door really softly all the time and he'd leave like little presents and like these notes, these absolutely just unhinged little written notes. He would come to my work and, you know, hang outside my work. I think like the worst night, I think, is I woke up, I think he had someone over and they were just screaming and chanting. And I was like, I have no idea what's going on. And this is too much. And then I heard him say, "You stupid bitch. Who the fuck do you think you are? I ought to fucking stand on your neck and snap it or toss you through a window. Who the fuck do you think you are listening to the radio all day?" And I wanted to die because literally I had no entertainment at that time. So I had been listening to the radio all day And like, he would do things like call up to our window and like, you know, during the day and ask if we'd like been having sex and stuff like that. And it was just like, I think it's, and it's so stupid because he was like quite physically like malnourished looking. So I probably could have kicked his butt, but I was so terrified. And like, there was one morning where he would just like, he'd rap on the door and he'd be like, "Where's Rachel? I want to talk to Rachel." And like at that time, because this was like during the early 2000s, I could not get anyone to take me seriously. Every time I tried to talk to landlord, police or whatever, it kind of got treated as like a noise control issue. And I'm like, it's not a noise control issue.
No,
like,
that's stalking.
I just need someone to listen to me. Oh my goodness. And I think I just have this thing with like intruders coming into my home now where I just feel like someone's going to come in all the time. So I think that's why I, like, I'll have night terrors and I'll start screaming in my sleep. Like, there's a few other stuff surrounding that, but I think that's, like, the main thing where I'm just like, someone's going to come in, and it just, I can't get rid of it.
You still deal with those?
Yes.
And are you doing anything for it? Are you through therapy or through anything to treat
that? I'm in and out of therapy. I think I love the idea of therapy in theory. I think it's a great thing, but it's hard to find a good therapist.
Mm.
Like, it's hard to find a good match for yourself. And it's also hard to be mentally ready for therapy because therapy is like very,
it's a lot of
like,
work.
You have to put the work in and you have to think about all that really hard stuff. And sometimes I'm just like not there, but yes, I've been in and out.
Yeah. You mentioned taking hiatuses in the past. Is that time where you can really rest and recover, or is that when you just deal with all like your accounting stuff and management things and stay busy with something else?
Yes, I'd say that's true. I am very much like a workaholic and I can't help it. And I'm not framing that as a good thing either.
No, like, it doesn't sound like it.
I'm like, I do not want to be alone with my own thoughts and I would prefer to do work. Thank you. And I think I have always been that way. I'm getting better with taking time off. It always feels like every time I take time off, I always feel like I'm failing like everyone around me. But I'm like, don't do that. Because I'm like, if you run yourself into the ground, you can't do any work. And that's not very helpful to anyone, especially myself.
Hmm. I want to ask about the Laura Olympus storyline that deals with rape, trauma, and recovery. It's intense in the book, and people have written a lot about it, as you know. I don't need to tell you. In telling that story with those characters, how do you go about telling that story in a way that gets it right, that is sensitive and compelling as a piece of fiction? And it's true to the mythological characters and everything like that. Like, what is that process?
So I think in terms of someone, you know, me being a person of a survivor of varying levels of sexual assault, which I won't go into like huge detail about. And again, like, before I say this, I don't want to like shit on what any other person gets, like, you know, what they get catharsis from in terms of media and seeing sexual assault, rape in it, because I feel like there are some stories where I, you know, watch it and I'm like, this does nothing for me as like a survivor. Like, it doesn't, like, I don't get anything out of watching a revenge story, because when you know, have someone like physically assault you or like put something inside of you, whatever. Like, it's not like someone's come and stolen your boombox. Like, it's not like you can get the boombox back. It's not like you feel it's such an isolating process where it's like, even it's hard to talk about. It's, you know, hard to articulate. And it's just, yeah, I don't get anything out of watching a revenge story. And a lot of times, like, again, I don't want to shit on other people and what they enjoy, because what one person feels recovery from is not the same as the next person. We're all different. But I don't get any joy out of watching, you know, a movie where like a woman gets raped and then the male character is like, I will punch your rapist in the face. And then the female character is like, I feel so much better now. Thank you. I'm like, that's, it doesn't hit it for me. And so I was like, oh, I really want to have a piece of media story that's more about the actual character and what they would go through and what they need. And I think this is why Laura Olympus is successful. Like, it's a fantasy, not in the sense that, like, it has gods and goddesses and magic in it. It's a fantasy in the sense that, like, this young woman has, you know, gone through all these things and she has people in her community who, like, want to hear her and help her. And, you know, she you know, gets a good therapist right away who's, like, very, you know, helpful. And
it's a mythological world where you can get a great therapist, like, right off the bat.
Yeah, I'm like, that never happens. Oh, my gosh. And, like, I just want to see this character, you know, thrive after all this has happened and have a good life. And it's more about her and her recovery and less about what happens to, you know, her attacker, if you will.
Were there many drafts and different attempts to kind of avoid getting it wrong, or did it all just come organically straight out of you?
I think early on it was very organic because the audience was way smaller and I was like, oh, I'm just doing this for me. And at that stage, you know, I still had my day job and I was like, yeah, maybe like 100 people will read it. That'll be cool. And I kind of enjoy that aspect of it, as it is so unconcerned. Like, it's very the thing that I wanted to make and I'm not worried about how it will be received. I think later on there are much more, you know, like, I'll spend a lot of time like combing over the dialogue again and again and again to make sure that it is the way that I want it to be.
So when I looked at the webtoon for Laura Olympus, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll brush up on what this person wrote in advance of this interview, which is what I always do. If I'm interviewing somebody who wrote a book, I'll read the book, of course. And there was just so much. And then the books arrived in the mail and it was in this big box. And I just kept pulling more and more books out of this box. And it just seems like it has been such a marathon for you that it couldn't help but affect you in a pretty deep way. What effect has the series had on your mental health?
It's hard to say, in the sense that, like, I've always had pretty turbulent mental health. So I feel like to pin it on this particular project is sort of a bit easy for me to do in that sense. But in many ways, it's been fantastic because I've just had quite a challenging life and this has given me a lot of opportunities that I would not have had. And it is extraordinarily validating because I feel like a lot of people throughout my life have been like, you are not a very smart person. And now I'm like, I am. I was on the New York Times bestsellers list three times in number one position. Like, I can't, like, the just tangible evidence.
Yeah, so the data has come in on that.
Yes.
One. Yeah.
I'm like, even if I struggle to believe it, the data is there.
Yeah, right.
So I think, you know, that's fantastic. And it's given me a lot of opportunities to just achieve all the things that I ever wanted to achieve. So in that sense, it's fantastic. In terms of being a workaholic, I think probably, I'm like, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, because you can certainly be a workaholic if you're making a webtoon. I think I really enjoy, this is bad, by the way, so no one look up to me for this, but I really enjoy the crunch of, like, you know, working really hard and then having the thing and being like, there's the thing. But I do, there is times where I'm like, man, I just want to have, like, a week off and have it not be a big, big organizational effort. Sometimes I just want to get off the merry-go-round just briefly. That would be good, because it all goes very quickly.
Are you a workaholic?
Yes.
Okay. Are you, do you want to recover from that, or do you want to stay practicing as a workaholic?
I think I definitely want to recover from that, yes. I'm like, I feel like I am using it to self-soothe a lot of things that I don't want to deal with. And I think I use it as a big protection blanket.
Protection from what?
I think it puts me in a position of control of my own life. And many times where I have not had control, I've had to go with things that I don't want to do. But if I'm like working all the time, I can be like, I'm working. I'm so noble. Leave me alone. And then people have to kind of thing.
Well, so just... and you probably do that thing where you say, well, I can't because I have to work. And
yes.
You know, it's not my choice. I have to do this.
Yes. It's very much a protection, I think.
Yeah. Have you made any steps to go into recovery for your workaholism?
I'm definitely getting to the stage where I'm like, look, my body cannot keep doing this. Do you ever just like feel your knees and you're like, oh no, my knees, they're not kneeing as good as they should be kneeing? And like, computer jobs are not good for people. This is not a secret. We know computer jobs are not good for people. And like prior to making a Webtoon, I used to be a gym person. Like I used to be one of those people who goes to the gym like twice a day, which is probably another problem in itself.
That's a lot of going to the gym, yeah.
So like I feel like I am always a person who will just like lean into everything and like go big or go home.
Wow. Well, go big or don't go home, go back to the gym.
Yeah.
What was your day job before you could do this full time?
I worked in a job which was several things. Marketing, graphic design, and events, and okay. Photography. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
How long ago were you able to leave that behind?
I moonwalked out of that place in 2018, and it was great.
Oh, good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, I hope that you can find a way to accept the love that people are giving you regardless of and know that it would be there if you never drew another panel of anything. It's still going to be there for what you've already done.
Yeah.
And the reason why it's there is that there's so much heart in what you do that's what people are responding to. It's, you know, anybody could retell Hades and Persephone, but it's the love that you give those characters in those situations that is coming back to you. So I hope you can find your way to a spoonful of that to hold on to.
I will.
Okay.
I will. Thank you.
Rachel Smythe, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great.
Rachel Smythe's series, Lore Olympus, is available in 3 bound print volumes. Volume 4 is due in May. Or you can look it up on Webtoons, that's Web TOONS, and just scroll and scroll and scroll for days and days because there's so much of it. Laura House is here with a meditation moment right after the break.
Where am I?
On Maximum Fun.
What do you want?
A podcast miniseries about The Prisoner.
Whose side are you on?
That would be telling, but okay, I'm on my own side. It's one of my favorite ever TV shows. We want a podcast on it. A Prisoner podcast.
You won't get it.
By hook or by crook, we will.
Who are you?
I'm Elliot Kalin.
Who is number one?
Jesse Thorne. But you are John Hodgman.
I am not a prisoner podcaster. I am a free man. Oh, are you okay? Elliot, are you all right? Okay, I'll watch it.
All 4 episodes of Depotting You are out now.
And it's time for a meditation moment with our friend Laura House. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
I heard from one of our listeners that they've been applying something that you sometimes say to the rest of their life, which is, you may have some distracting thoughts, and that's okay.
Oh, good.
And she said it works for more than just meditation.
Yes. Well, that's such a great point. It's all this, what you do in meditation, it's the opposite of Vegas. What you do in meditation can actually help outside of meditation. Like, we don't keep it in meditation. So in line at Starbucks and super annoyed, you can still notice your breath and be like, oh, that's right. I'm here in this annoying situation, but I'm also here just in my body, mm-hmm. breathing, being a human.
Human in the universe. Well, let's find our way even more into ourselves and be more part of the universe here, shall we?
Oh, good. Yes. So pretty easy. You want to sit comfortably where you can and close your eyes. So be somewhere it's safe to close your eyes. And first, you just want to relax. You don't have to feel some amazing thing or do anything in particular. Just let go. And become aware that you're breathing. You might notice it in your nose area or your chest or your belly. And you don't have to try to change your breath or make it deeper, slower, better, or whatever. Just have it. And you'll also have thoughts. And when you notice your attention is on your thoughts, just put your attention back on the breath really effortlessly. You can go ahead and open your eyes and feel 1,000% better. Too much?
Now you win.
Now go get them.
Now tense yourself up and go. No, now, don't.
Yeah. Go win life.
Go be part of life at least. Let's say that.
Yeah, just feel a little better. I realize too, people listening, if you want longer meditations, just hit pause. Just hit pause and let it be as long as you want.
Yeah, I imagine editing these for our producer, Gabe Mara, has to be something of an adventure because how much pause to leave in, but probably just the same amount that you leave in. Laura House is the co-host of the Tiny Victories podcast. You can find more about Laura and all the things she does at laurahouse.com. Laura, thanks.
Thank you.
Next time on Depression Mode, it's our 100th episode, so we'll play back the other 99 in their entirety. No, not really. We will talk about what we learned, though. Remember, my new show, Sleeping with Celebrities, is out now. It's a podcast designed to give you mild, relaxing conversation and a few laughs as you doze off to sleep. The newest episode has Radiolab's Lulu Miller talking about how you can't really understand what it's like being a bat. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Then get some sleep. If people support our show, we can keep having Depression Mode. If they don't, we can't. We like making it, and I think you like listening to it. I think you get something out of it. Please support Depression Mode. It's super easy to do. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join and pick a level that works for you, and then select Depression Mode from the shows that are available. It's just that easy. If you're already supporting the show, thank you. You are helping people. Be sure to hit subscribe, give us 5 stars, write rave reviews. That helps get the show out into the world even more. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available in the United States 24/7 for free by calling 988. Just remember 988. The Crisis text line, also free and always available. Just text the word HOME to 741-741. We love to hear from you. Our electric mail is depreshmode@maximumfun.org. Our Instagram is depreshpod. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. A lot of good conversation happening over there in Preshies group on Facebook. Our Depression Mode newsletter is available on Substack. Search that up. I'm on Twitter @JohnMo. I'm on Instagram @JohnMo also. Hi, credits listeners. Someone told me they really loved my new show, Sleeping with Celebrities, and that they loved it so much they fell asleep listening to it. Well, I've been making shows for over 20 years, and that's never been a good thing before, to have a listener fall asleep. Well, good thing, I guess, now. You stick around long enough, anything can happen. Depression Mode is made possible by your contributions. The show is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson, and we get booking help from Mara Davis. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out. Building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason, maybe there's no reason, I just keep believing. No one knows the answer, maybe there's no answer, I just keep on dancing.
Hi, this is Lainey from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You are so, so important, and I can't imagine a world without you.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.